Hey, of course it is the Christmas season, and we are in Advent. We are preparing. We have discovered the Advent Gospels. I shared three of them with you last week. I want to share another three today. This is Father Voskin. I am a priest of the Armenian Church, and we connect the dots between the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, and everything in between. I'm asking you to take the next step with us. This is episode number 444.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready, we're taking the next step.
A revolution is a fight to death between the future and the past. Fidel Castro. Marking an end to 90 years of life, passed away last week. Former leader of Cuba. I guess if he was a current leader of Cuba, we'd probably expect some changes down there. And depending where you're waking up, how you wake up, how you receive the news, what he meant to you, you can view him as a revolutionary, as a tyrant, as a dictator. Became what he promised he would never be. Became what he fought against. Or others may see him as a hero. His health care, education, was something that people looked at and said, wow, it is possible. Communist stood up even when the Soviet Union went down. They asked him, what was wrong with the Soviet Union? What happened to communism? And he turned to them and said, why aren't you asking me what's right with Cuba? Perception, huh? Listen, we don't do politics, but we sure like playing with it, don't we? There's so much wishy-washiness about politics, but I want to share with you this small statement that I found fascinating, and I'll tell you why. A revolution is a fight to death between the future and the past. Fidel Castro mentioned this during an interview, and I think that when we talk about revolution, which we do so often here, right? The spiritual revolution, the revolution that Christ brought. I think Christ came in to bring a revolution unlike any other. In other words, you have this option and this ability to really live this life to its fullest, an opportunity to engage in peace, to engage in knowledge, to engage in love, to become the best you can be. Jesus brought about a revolution, but people perceived him differently, right? Definitely when you read New Testament and you read it historically, you understand that there was a conflict there. That the Jews were looking for something else in a Messiah. They were looking for a political leader. It caused Jesus in many cases, many people would argue that it led to his destruction within the Jewish state. Other people can read the comments of Jesus and see him as a revolutionary in the sense of bringing about a new order. Of understanding, of peace, of tolerance, of harmony. You need a revolution to get there. And so, When Castro says something like, a revolution is a fight to death between the future and the past, I challenge you to look at it in Christian terms. What is the future? Well, the future for me is peace. That's the hope you live with, right? That there is a peace. Physical, spiritual, emotional. It's that equilibrium. It's what all things are in flux for. They all want to reach their equilibrium, right? That general harmony throughout nature. What is the past? Well, that's the war. That's slavery. That's oppression. Think about it for a moment, okay? Future, peace. Past, war, slavery, oppression. Where have you heard these words? Where do you hear it? Where do you hear it in terms of future and past? The Holy Bible, right? Think about it for a moment. Challenge yourself. Get away from all of the stereotypes and everything that you've heard and understand and start understanding with your heart. What am I talking about? The Old Testament is the past, right? Filled with war, strife, slavery, oppression, God looking down and saying, hey, I'm picking you out and I'm not picking you out. I've created you all, but by the way, I like you more than I like the other one. These are just old ways of describing what? The unfairness of life. War, slavery. I don't know about you. I'll tell you, I don't believe in a God that says, hey, I've created. These are my children, and by the way, I like this group of children a little bit better than the other group. And so, let them have a war. And let the good ones win. Come on, folks. Past. War, slavery, oppression. And what's the future? Jesus Christ. That's the New Testament. The New Testament is that opportunity, is that hope. And the possibility of peace. Fidel Castro, political man, though I did see an interview with him right after the revolution had started, 1959. I saw an interview where he says he's a Catholic. Fidel Castro did say, a revolution is a fight to death between the future and the past. Let's plug in our terms. It's a fight to death between peace, an opportunity for peace, and the past, war, slavery, oppression. That's our starting thought today. Glad you're with us today. I've got a show for you. We're going to be continuing on the Advent Gospels as we started last week. I've got some good music for you today. I found an incredible band this week. And I've got to tell you that I have been unable to stop listening to this music. A group called Blackmore's Night. Oh, but I'm going to stop today because sad news. Greg Lake passed away of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer fame. One of the early progressive rock artists. I'm going to share some insights and more than insights, I guess, anecdotal information about an opportunity I had several years ago, a very magical night, to be in their company. That's coming up for the song today. I do want to start off today with some reflections on travels. Okay, what I get to do lately is I get to travel around to different churches and participate in the liturgies. And last Sunday I was up in Portland, Oregon for the Divine Liturgy. I have to tell you, I hadn't been this elated in a long time. What a wonderful community up there. Just a super, super community. It was a family. It was like a family. And now here's a group of people who really you understand the spirit must be moving because unfortunately they are left without pastor and yet they get together in a spirit of fellowship, of Christian camaraderie. It was just really beautiful. And here, this is what happened. I got there and the gentleman who picked me up from the airport took me to church, and he said, oh, the deacons are waiting in the choir. Well, I got there, and the choir was this young lady who played the organ, piano organ. And there was a gentleman standing there. And later I found out that he was the singer. So the choir was this man who would sing, the lady who would play the organ, and I'm waiting for deacons, and there weren't any. And she looked over at me, the organist, and said, there aren't any deacons today. And I said, okay, I guess the show must go on, right? I hate saying it that way, but you know what I'm talking about. So we celebrated the liturgy, and it was so wild. There's no other way to describe it. It was really wild to celebrate as priest and as a helper to the priest, the deacon, and to have a congregation, I'd say maybe about 40, 50 people in congregation. And this is the first time that I'm up there, so you have no opportunity to prepare. But we did have a little opportunity to share and express what the meaning of that service was. And it was just very spiritually upbeat, spiritually satisfying for me, and I think for a lot of other people who came up to me afterwards and shared their insight. And we had a chance to be together afterwards as well, sharing in fellowship, and overall just a beautiful opportunity to be together with Armenian Christians in a wild area, basically. Wild in the sense that it's 12 time zones away from where Armenians began. And here they are in a space called Portland, Oregon, celebrating, praying. I mean, think about it, really, huh? It's wild. In fact, I call this the miracle. I've talked about this in the past, right? And I shared it with the congregation there that to me, this is really what miracles are all about. The unexpected, right? Anyway, okay, so I do this service by myself. And I'm on the plane coming back. And, you know, it's a great time to be on a plane trip to catch up with reading. So I had my magazines. I had my little tablet with me doing a little bit of electronic reading, some real reading. You know what that is, right? Where you flip the pages and you dog-ear the pages. Yeah, I love that stuff. Anyway, reading a lot of stuff on my way back. And all of a sudden, I see this post, and it catches my attention. Is it a sin to break the fast? And here somebody has written about, I guess, you know, fasting. That, you know, there's benefits to fasting. Okay, we all know that. But then, is it a sin to break the fast? I'm reading this, going down. I'm going, what? I mean, talk about irrelevance. Talk about a church that has lost its meaning and practice for the people. So I'm reading this, I'm going on, and meanwhile, at the same time, I'm also reading all kinds of stuff. You know, that there's wars going on in the world, the political climate in the world, the environmental climate. Did you hear just today? I mean, this new president-elect has assigned somebody who doesn't even believe in the Environmental Protection Agency to be the secretary of that agency. I mean, somebody wants to close it down. I guess that tells you where they're at. Environment. So goes Pope Francis's call for environment. Yeah. I know. Christian rights out there. Oh, yeah, we like this guy. He's a Christian. Doesn't matter if he doesn't care about the environment. He's a Christian. So there's all this kind of stuff, and then we get this little writing about, well, here's the Christian fast. And so anyway, I read about it, and I you know what? At the end of it, all I could think about was, like, really? Really? I put it up, and then I got a couple friends who commented, what are you talking? Why were you so negative on this post about fasting? And I'll make sure there's a link on today's show notes so you could read it and do whatever you want with it. But it came down to this, and I took a moment to really explain why I had to say really. And I do want to share it with you because I think it's important that we understand that we need to be critical of moments like this when they're presented in terms of Christianity that's taking place today. We need to be that voice that brings people back to reality. Like, okay, fasting has a purpose and there's an intention. Remember when Jesus is stopped and they say, why are your disciples picking food, doing work, basically, on the Sabbath? Don't you know that the rule is, the law is, that you have to keep the Sabbath holy? There's no work on there. And Jesus turns and says, the Sabbath was created for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, these laws, these regulations have to serve you. They have to make sense in some way. You are not created for the laws. So I'm reading this, you know, this thing about fasting and is it a sin? And I'm going to just share with you the last paragraph, and I'll tell you why I was so offended by it. It says, the aspect of fasting that I would like to mention is the unity of the church, which is the body of Christ. And that's beautiful, right? Fasts and feasts of the church create a certain kind of unity among its members. Think of your family. Relatives have meals together, celebrate important events together, and stick together during sad times. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. This helps maintain cohesion and unity within the family. And if anyone decides to abstain from family life, then he or she is essentially cutting themselves off from the family. It is the same in the church. We keep fast together and we celebrate feast together as a family of God. And if anyone decides not to fast together with the church or not to join the church family in festival celebrations, then they are separating themselves from our family, cutting themselves off from the body. This is where I had a problem. And if you do not want to join your brothers and sisters in this short temporal life, how do you plan to spend eternity with them? Now we're on the eternity page, okay? You can't pull it off here in the world. Now I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to you in eternity. Our faith is not individual. This stick, the author writes. It is not about one single person being saved in some solitary way. Salvation is possible only in the body of Christ and only as a member of that body. A branch which is cut off from the vine no longer inherits life but is thrown into a burn pile. Very, very, very judgmental there, right? Yeah, you're going to get burnt off. Okay, folks, here, let me tell you really straight out why this, first of all, doesn't even belong on an Armenian Orthodox page, let alone on a Christian page. First of all, it says our faith is not individualistic. It is not about one single person being saved in some solitary way. Well, if it's not, then why are you claiming that, you know, you have to be that in, you have to be a part of that collective? In other words, your life has to matter, right? That is, that solitary life is important. That's the only thing that you have control over. That's the only thing that you can manage, and that is the only thing for which you will be judged, is that solitary life that you have. Now, he says over here, salvation is possible only in the body of Christ and only as a member of that body. A branch which is cut off from the vine no longer inherits life. I'm sorry, folks. This is not the analogy that Jesus Christ, the founder of this faith, has set up. He says, I am the vine. I am the true vine, and you are the branches. A branch which has been separated from that vine cannot bear fruit. Okay, I'm sorry. The vine is not the church. The vine is Jesus Christ. The entire system there, you can say, is the church. With Christ as the head, with Christ as the vine, we as the branches, I mean, collectively together we operate as the church. But you as a branch cut off from the church, I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that. Jesus' analogy is very clear. He is the vine. My Father is the vine dresser. You are the branches. Make sure you are connected to me. And in that connection, you have an opportunity to practice your faith at different levels. And let me be honest with you. There are churches, I don't care if the entire collective of that church decides one way and you feel that it is wrong, you need to stand up. And you need to be individualistic enough to say that I'm sorry, that is scripturally unsound. You need to be able to stand up and say that that is wrong, that is against the tenets of the Christian faith. Just because the rest of the church decides something is, this is the way it is. Can you imagine if we all went along with it? What would you have? You'd have this situation that we have in the church right now. Yeah. It's a delicate balance. I know that. I've struggled with this all my life. This is the revolution. This is the life and death revolution that we've been talking about. But it's just wrong to sit here and say that, okay, here, this is a system, namely fasting, or if we could say candle lighting or whatever else you want. It's not about fasting. I fast regularly. I hope you do. It's a part and parcel of our Christian experience, right? It's not, you're not better, you're not worse for fasting. There's no great benefit to me in your minds by me fasting or to you in my mind, right? It's between me and God. It's between no one else. And if I fast, it's no one else's business. If you fast, it's not my business. It's between you and God. And your relationship with Christ is between you and God. The church, sure, it's the structure. It's the means. As St. Paul says, Christ is the head, we are the bodies. We have to be the hands, the legs, the mouthpiece for that head, for Christ, in sharing his love here in this temporal existence. And you become part of that when you decide. As an individual, you decide that I want to be a part of that body. And you start functioning in that body. Now, why did I react like this? Because I was standing up there. I was doing this service by myself. There were no deacons. And it occurred to me that, you know, that wasn't my choice. It certainly wasn't the choice of the parish. I think if they could have, they would have brought their deacons. But for some reason, on that particular day, the deacons had not come. I believe there were two of them in the town, and they had not come that day. So I was forced, because of circumstances, to celebrate the liturgy as I did. And also because of timing. I think if you think about it, if I was there maybe an hour, a couple hours earlier, I would have had time to maybe ask somebody to come and assist and share with them the text and say, can you go through this liturgy with me? I would appreciate it. But basically being thrown into an area where you don't know anybody, you just come off of a plane and you have to celebrate the service because you've got 50 people waiting there, and you are now in that situation as priest and deacon. You have to make some executive decisions, and you decide, okay, this is how we're going to go. So following that service, you read something that, hey, this is not an individual thing. You start questioning that, who is this person to tell anybody? To tell anybody that this is the way to go. This is, I've always cautioned you about this. This word is, in the name of God. Be careful. It's wrong to say God believes this. Now, you believe that a God believes this, right? God's... Don't tell God what he's going to believe. You believe that God believes this. I believe that God believes this. That's a proper statement. Because in that statement you're saying, I believe in a God, and I believe that that God is defined as I see it. Right? God could be outside of every expectation we have. Do you agree with me or not? Absolutely. Just the definition of God is that it's indescribable, beyond our understanding. Okay, so beyond that understanding could be in some other dimension, could be in some other universe, right? Absent of all the laws that we have in this universe. Now we're getting metaphysical, okay? I tend to go that way, I'm sorry. What I want to share with you right now is be wary and be careful when people come off and say, this is the way it should be. And let me add to this that last week, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the false information that was coming out of Facebook. False news, right? Distorted news. This is one of them. You know, sometimes they go under the banner of a church, and so somebody reads it, and you think that it's the church talking. No, it is not the church talking. It's one person deciding that this is the way it should be. That last statement should bother anybody. A branch which is just cut off from the vine no longer inherits life, but is thrown into a burn pile. Absolutely true. But the analogy is about Christ and us. Not about the church in us. Not about the body in us. It's about Christ in us. And so while we applaud the use of an analogy, I can't say the same about my enthusiasm about where the analogy led. John 15. That's where it is. Read it for yourself. Okay, I'm going to take a break right now. We're going to do the song of the day this week. Greg Lake passed away. I'll tell you about a story about when we had a chance to see him along with Emerson and Palmer. Before that, let's play the song of the day in his memory. A beautiful Christmas piece. Father Christmas. Enjoy.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir. The peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell. Eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. And I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn. And I saw him and threw his disguise. Pain and sadness, leave your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be hail and hail. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
I Believe in Father Christmas by the late Greg Lake. Just passed away. May he rest in peace. a musician who was known back in the late 60s, actually, as one of the pioneers of progressive rock, King Crimson, and Emerson, Lake, and Palmer being the middle guy, right? Between the Emerson and the Palmer. I had a chance to see them back in 1996. I'll never forget it. It was a magical night. First of all, because I went with my son, Vadarjan. He was 10 years old at the time. And the reason why we had gone to this concert, it was Jethro Tull in the Northern California Bay Area. His only performance that year, 1996, at the Concord Pavilion. And I said, okay, my kid is 10 years old. This is what you look forward to, taking your kid to this concert, right? We went, and Emerson, Lake, and Palmer opened for Tull that evening. It was magical. Because, first of all, Keith Emerson, who passed away, I think, earlier this year, it was the keyboardist. He played a keyboard that I had never seen. Yes, not heard, but never seen that way. He was actually upside down. Think about this, okay? Upside down underneath the piano, playing the keys. So if you're doing it, what you're doing is your left and your right hand are switched around. You're playing left hand with your right hand, but your right hand is in backward order, where your thumb is now at the lower keys. And your left hand, you have your thumb playing the higher keys, because you're underneath the piano. Just a wild, I can't explain it. And we saw them, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. When you talk about progressive music back in the 60s, early 70s, this was like experimenting with things that gave life and meaning, purpose. I don't know, it was just a very wild time. And I feel very fortunate because I had a chance to see them, along with my son, back in 1996, opening up for Tull. It was just a magical night. I hope you enjoyed that song. There will be a link on today's show notes to this song, as well as all the other wonderful music that he has produced through the years. And as I shared with you earlier, I had a chance to be exposed to a group called Blackmore's Night this week. And I haven't been able to stop listening. It is so good. So I will have a link on today's show notes to them as well. And hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll be able to share with you some of the beautiful music that's coming out of Blackmore's Night. But for today, Song of the Day, that was Greg Lake, just passed away. May he rest in peace. In the season of Advent, this preparatory period before Christmas, and as I shared with you last week, I discovered the Advent Gospels as a set of Gospels pointing us to Christmas. This was a revelation for me of sorts, because we have always known that the Lenten period gears us toward Easter. And in the Armenian Church, we have these golden Sundays, as they're called, the golden chain of Sundays, one wrapped around the other, like links that link us between the before Lent, Pun Pare Genton, the day of good living, and Easter Sunday, the ultimate celebration of celebrations, right? Not so with Christmas. We prepare ourselves for Christmas with a wide variety of different prayers and liturgies and rituals, but we have never made that Kendes. And last week, it occurred to me that, wow, these are really interconnected Gospels. And you cannot arrive at Christmas without really understanding the depth of these Gospel messages. And so I shared with you the first three Gospels last week, and I'm going to do the second set of three Gospels today. Interestingly enough, they are all from the Gospel of Luke. They follow in order. The first one, the Luke chapter 11, chapter 12, chapter 13. Today we start with Luke chapter 14. And it is a story that, much like all the other Gospels, during the Advent season, this too, you cannot escape it, but a little bit more than that. I think that without this gospel, you cannot arrive at Christmas. It is the story of the great banquet. And what's beautiful about this story is if you think about Christmas as being the nativity of Christ, in other words, it is his birthday, and what is the custom that we have around birthdays is you take a gift to the person celebrating that birthday, right? What would you take to Jesus Christ on his birthday? Yeah, it's that simple, right? It is Jesus' birthday. Christmas is Jesus' birthday, okay? What would you take? You have been invited to his birthday party. What would you take? And interestingly enough, as you are thinking about all the things that you might want to take him on a new fishing pole, right? A new car? Yeah, well, he deserves it, right? Yeah, why not give him something nice, big luxury item, like a nice brand new car, you know, leather seats. The cows he's created, you know, like skin them and put leather seats down. What can we give him? A pen with his name on it, you know? What can you give Jesus Christ for Christmas, for his birthday? And while you're racking your brain right now, guess what? Jesus tells us what he wants. Yeah, and that's what today's gospel is. It is the gospel found in chapter 14 of the Gospel of St. Luke. And it is about what he expects for Christmas. Listen, he says, one Sabbath when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Jesus asked the Pharisees and the experts of the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" And they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. Okay, so Jesus is making the point that he as creator, he as the living Lord, as God, is in their midst. And his primary focus is the well-being of all of us. And all of these regulations we've put, whether it's observing the Sabbath or observing fasting, these are things that cannot get in the way of seeing the fullness of God. It continues. He says, when he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, "Give this person your seat." Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. And when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, "Friend, move up to a better place." Then you will be honored in the presence of all of the other guests. For all who are exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Now, did you catch that? It's really important to understand what's going on, the dynamics. I don't know if you've ever seen that. I've seen it on several occasions, where somebody will walk into an event. They will sit in a very prominent area, right in the middle or in the front. And, you know, it's not your seat. So obviously somebody's going to come up to you and say, "Hey, buddy, you know, would you mind getting up?" And as you get up, what happens? You are humiliated. Everybody sees you. They look at you. But if you sit in a humble place, if you sit in the back, then the only place you can go is forward, right? When somebody notices that you are in the wrong place, hey, come up front. That's what Jesus is saying. Humble yourself. Have a little humility, okay? Especially, it's my birthday, right? Where should the birthday boy be sitting? Think about it. The place of honor. What do we usually do during Christmas? Where is that place of honor? Who sits at that place of honor? Where is our Christmas focus? Is it to the birthday boy who was in that place of honor? That's the question we need to ask. Jesus then said to the host, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends." Okay, you ready for the list that Jesus wants to give you? What do you want for Christmas, Jesus? What do you want for your birthday? Here's the list that I want, he's telling you. When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or your sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Look how simple it is. There's his list for Christmas. When you're going to be celebrating Christmas, don't invite the people who can do something in return to you. Instead, go out there and invite the poor. Give to the crippled, the lame, the blind. And guess what? You will be blessed. What else do you want? You see how easy it is, and you see how we complicate it? You know how our Christmas giving is, right? It's like usually a tit for tat. Let's see, what did he buy me? Okay, he spent $20 on that. Okay, I better not spend any more than that. And if I spend a little bit less than that, he may know that I was being cheap. Well, that one didn't even spend $50 on me. Okay, I better be up there. I can't give him something from my heart because that doesn't have that value. Christmas giving, when you give to people who have no way of repaying you. And where's the example for that? Isn't that all of our case? What is the ultimate gift that Christ gave us for Christmas? Himself. God gave us his only begotten Son. Do we have a way of repaying Christ? He gave to us in the same way that he demands that we give to one another, without expectation. Then he gives this parable. When one of those at the table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, "Blessed is the one who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God." And Jesus said, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited all and many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.' And they all alike began to make excuses. The first one said, 'I have just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me.' The another one said, 'I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me.' Still another said, 'I just got married, so I can't come.'" Okay, now these examples, I hope you realize that, it's just a story, right? You need to put in the examples that make sense for you. I just bought a field. Well, okay, I just bought a house. I have to go and take care of it. I have to go and see what the thing is. Think about this for a moment, okay? Jesus Christ is inviting you to something. I got to go do something. Where do we hear this? Every Sunday morning, right? The divine liturgy, the invitation to be part and parcel of Christ's supper, to be a part of the living body of Jesus Christ. There's the invitation. I'm sorry, I only got one Sunday. I only got one day. I can't make it, right? What's the other one? He says, "I bought a field there. Oh, I just bought 5 yoke of oxen. Hey, I got a new car. Got to go test it out, and I don't have too much time, so I'm going to do it today. While you've invited me, this is what I'm going to do." And the third one, well, I just got married, so I can't come. Okay, let's just keep that one as is, right? I got married. Can't do it, right? In other words, you have all the excuses in the world, right? If you don't want to do it, you don't do it. Jesus said, he continued the parable by saying, the servant came back and reported this to the master, all of these excuses. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servants, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town. Bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. I invited people. They don't want to come. I'm not going to go after them. I'll get new people. Thank God there's enough new people out there. You have made the conscious decision to stay away from the table. God has not closed the door. You have made the conscious decision to say, I'm sorry, I've got something more important than you right now. I've got something so important that I don't have time for you, God. God doesn't say, hey, please, 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 I need you to come here. He says, no. Go out and find more people to come. The servants said, sir, what you ordered we have done, but there's still room. Of course there's still room. This is the table of eternity. And the master told his servant, go out to the roads and the country lanes, compel them to come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. I've invited people. They don't want to come. Guess what? They're going to miss out on the banquet. Christmas message. The Gospels of Advent. That's the fourth one. The fifth one is an interesting one because it talks about faith, duty, and of course, about sin. A favorite topic for so many people. Let's take a look at it. It comes to us from Luke chapter 17. Again, among the Luke stories. Jesus said to his disciple, things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anyone through whom they come. It would be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. So watch yourselves. If a brother or sister sins against you, rebuke them. And if they repent, forgive them. Even if they sin against you seven times in a day, and seven times they come back to you saying, I repent, you must forgive them. Okay, so the first portion of this passage that we read, Jesus is talking about sin. Try not to be the obstacle for other people. Take care of yourself. Okay? Take care of what God has given you. Okay? Don't worry about everybody else out there. Take care of yourself. And remember, if somebody sins, rebuke them. Ask them to repent. And then he says, forgive them. Now that forgiveness, you know that forgiveness is divine. That's exactly what it is. It's ultimately wiping the slate clean and saying, let's start again. It's saying that you can't change the past, so I'm not going to hold you accountable for that. There's nothing you can do about the past. But I ask you to be part of my life right now. And there you are. That's what that forgiveness is. It's ultimate. It's clean. It's a preparation for Christmas. Right? These Gospels all point to the fullness of Christmas. So at that point, Scripture tells us the apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. Okay, you hear all this, now you turn to Jesus and say, okay, increase my faith. I'm buying into this. Increase my faith. And he replied, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, You can say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it will obey you. Suppose one of you has a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now and sit down to eat? Won't he rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink? After that, you may eat and drink. Okay, now this is really hard for me. I mean, like, I can't have somebody just watching over me while I eat and drink. Those of you who've been with me, no, I can't handle that. But anyway, you get the story here. In other words, that's what the servant is meant to do. In other words, that's what his function is. Whether you believe in servants, you don't, you know, that's secondary. Me personally, I'd go crazy if I had somebody like that. But what Jesus is saying is everybody has their purpose and their role. And so do you. And so he says, wouldn't you rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready and wait on me? Will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, all you need to say is we are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty. That's it. Don't expect extras for what is expected of you. And so when Jesus is saying this, he's pointing to a reality that we should come to understand at this point. If you're going to do good, do it because it's the right thing to do. Not for the rewards. Not for the extras, for the perks. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Again, this is one more gospel on the way to Christmas. Finally, let's look at the last one. This comes to us from Luke chapter 18. And this is a story which we are all familiar with. One of my favorites, but in the context of Christmas, it's also interesting. It's the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Two men went to the temple to pray, Jesus said. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. These two characters are important to remember who they are. Okay, Pharisee is not a bad guy. A lot of times people hear Pharisee and they always think negative. No, the Pharisee was the learned guy. He was the guy who knew backwards, forwards, the Holy Scriptures. He fasted. He did the right things. He went to church on time, in time. He did all of the right things. Okay, he was like, well, in terms of today, he would be like the super Christian. Back in those times, that's the guy. That's the guy everybody said, hey, look at that. That guy is cool. He's the right guy. He's in the favor of God. And so Jesus is now pointing to a Pharisee. And who's the other character? A tax collector. Tax collectors like today. Not a very popular profession. People didn't like him. But even more so back in those times, the tax collector were the Jews who were collecting taxes for the state, for the Roman Empire. So it was a double whammy. Not only were they collecting taxes, taking your money, but they were taking it and giving it to the enemy. Ah, horrible, man. So you've got this cool guy, this good guy that knows all of the scriptures, that is quote-unquote the holy man. And you've got this piece of garbage over there that's called the tax collector. Nobody likes. And so Jesus is saying the Pharisee and the tax collector, they go up to pray. And the first one, the Pharisee, stands there and says, God, I thank you that I am not like the other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like that tax collector, pointing to the other men. He says, I fast twice a day. Excuse me, fast twice a week. That would be that would be something, huh? Twice a day. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all that I get. I tithe, yeah. Cool. That's really nice, right? Meanwhile, Jesus tells us, the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven. And he was so filled with guilt, with ugliness, couldn't even look up at heaven. And he beat his breast, saying, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. That's it. No, that's it. Yeah, no. Are you waiting for more? No, that's all he said. Yeah. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. That's the parable. And the parable has an introduction, just in case you missed it. St. Luke writes, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. That's the purpose of this parable. When you feel self-righteous, when you look down on others. What is the prayer of the tax collector, if not those simple words that you hear over and over in the Armenian church services? Ded vormia, Lord, have mercy. Sometimes we get, people, I've heard it, and I know you must have if you're part of the Armenian church. Inche ded vormia, but he said, you're going to say ded vormia? Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. What are you going to say in the presence of God? You know, when it's time, what are you going to say to God? Hey, you know, like I amassed a huge fortune. You should see how much I got. What? What are you going to say? I got cool house. You know, I got centralized heat. And my pipes, they're the higher caliber of metal. They're not only copper, but the welding on them is from the finest copper that you can find from the Egyptian deserts. Ooh, cool, huh? Hey, have you checked out my car? Have you seen how nice it is? You know, that's crushed pearl. You know, those little pearls that you made in those oysters? Well, we killed a bunch of those. We took out the pearls and we crushed it and we put it in the paint on the car. What are you gonna say to God except, Ded vormia, Lord, have mercy. I'm completely at your mercy. And so it says it here. It says, this one who said, Lord, have mercy, he went away justified. And so in this final message or gospel, quote unquote gospel of the Advent season, we find the message of humility. And how beautiful that it comes to us just before Christmas, right? On the way to Christmas, because what is the ultimate message of humility if not the manger? If not that child, God eternal, who takes human form, and there is no room for him at the inn. And so, with all the possibilities that are available to him, to be born in some of the nicest places in the world. Even in the nicest times, right? He could have decided to come in 20 AD, 21 AD, right? Be hospitals. You know, if it was a difficult labor, they could have performed C-section, you know, whatever. It's better times, right? Now he comes at that moment of history, revealing himself at his birth in a manger. The most humble surroundings. The Prince of Peace, the King of all eternity. Giving us once again an example of humility. Now, I'm going to put the six Gospels that I shared with you last week and this week on today's show notes. Do read them for yourself. They're beautiful Gospels. And I personally feel that we have to start this tradition during the Christmas season to make these Gospel messages, these six Gospels, an integral part of our celebration, of our preparation, definitely, for the Feast of Christmas, for Nativity, or as we call it, the Theophany. There'll be more on that next week. Why don't we take a break right now? Let Susie make her announcements. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you, all of you, for the wonderful notes you send me, for the wonderful support you give us, and we appreciate it. It goes a long way, and we feel your prayers. It's getting close to the end of the year, and I know people want to make their donations for the year. It's a perfect time to share the goodness that God has blessed you with by becoming partner of this ministry. I've got some great news for you. I've been working with my sister Anush on a wild formula. A formula for what? For prayer. And we're going to unveil it next week, and I'm going to share it with all of you in an in-depth little session to understand exactly what it is. But it is some basic oils, some really important oils that assist and facilitate the prayer meditation process. And we're going to be labeling these as the In His Shoes brand, a beautiful, beautiful oil. And I'll give you more details on what it entails. But it's basically this calm, this hope, this peace. And by making it a part of your ritual of prayer, of meditation, it reminds you of, well, the needs of others, but also your responsibility towards others, of the love, the compassion, the care that's already inside of you, that is a part of you, and your need to share this with others. It's a very special oil, and we're going to be sending that out to our partners, to people who have been a part of this ministry throughout the year as a way of saying thank you, as a way of saying thank you for being a part of a very dynamic ministry that is touching so many people. So I'm going to share that with you next week, just giving you a little prelude that we're looking forward to making this a very special theophany season filled with many blessings, and I'm very proud and honored to be able to share these moments with you. I never want to take them as for granted or take advantage of your kindness and friendship. And so I want to offer a small prayer to all of you via this oil that is being prepared exactly for this ministry. I'll share more with you next week. In the meantime, I'm going to take a break right now and call it a day. We have our monthly feed tonight. I got to get out there and feed the homeless over at Ascensia. We are in the last days of our project, which is called The Promise of the Verdugos, partnering up with other churches in the area where we provide meals to young families that are on the street. And it's a really an exciting thing we've been doing for several years. My wife Susan heads it up. It's partnering with another church in your area and using the resources that you have. So in other words, our church, for instance, in Glendale didn't have the ability to house people, but we certainly had the manpower to cook for those people. And we found a church that didn't have the manpower, but definitely had the space. So that church opened the doors for lodging, for housing, while we took care of those meals. And it runs for the course of a week, and we do it every couple of months. And so we have an opportunity to meet other Christians who have the same excitement and desire to help others. And at the same time, we're doing something very concrete to bring the kingdom around. In other words, we're following Jesus' instructions for his birthday. We're helping those people who have no way of repaying us, except for the goodness that they're going to be doing to others. And I guarantee They will never forget that. I guarantee you, they will never forget the goodness that has been given, because love cannot die. That means it cannot even die in the memory. It will always be there. Those children that go through the system and remember that these complete strangers help them will remember one day and reach out to others. You want to make a big difference in life? Start with doing a little difference in your own community. That's the end of today's show. And you could do that. Yes, thank you. Ken looked at me. He pointed to the In His Shoes banner. You could do that via In His Shoes. That's what it's all about. You know what? We're getting toward the end of the year. I'm going to make a dedicate one day just to talk about what we're doing in His Shoes and invite you to be a part and parcel of that. But for right now, this is the pitch that I made. So join us at all the usual stops, whether you follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or at the mothership inhisshoes.org. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Ken, our engineer, for Susie, our producer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Top visits.